We want a dynamite from the most wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Well, hello, everyone. It is John Pollock and Wei Ting here with you on June the 19th. Juneteenth.
Mm-hmm. Happy Juneteenth.
Yes, to all of you out there. How are you?
Doing all right. Yeah, man.
What are you wearing?
I'm wearing a John Pollock t-shirt.
What is this going on?
Courtesy of Robert Pearson, a very limited run that he made for the auction for Real Digital. Last year. So I have one. You might even have one.
You did give me one, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. Shout out Robert Pearson.
Shout out to Robert Pearson. Just in life in general. Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Such a wonderful support, I feel.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I spent way too much time outside today, more than I intended.
Dude, it was, I was out for a little bit too. My daughter's like going crazy, like swimming. Like she just swims like all day in the backyard. That's what she does. And
she
I can't
swims
blame her.
In the backyard. So you have a like
we
a
have a little pool.
Pool
yeah.
Well, a kiddie pool. Yeah. It's the day for that, man. Oh, today.
You walk outside, it is like walking into a oven. It is just so muggy. It's just that real, like it's 30, but it feels like that super dry heat. It's just crazy when you walk outside and what you feel.
It was brutal. And today I spent a lot more time outside than I was intending because I had to get my car in for repair because the AC wasn't working.
Oh, dear.
I mean, it was one of those things where, like, I brought the car in because, like, it was this AC part was under warranty. And, of course, I bring it in and they tell me that other things need to be replaced that aren't covered under warranty.
It's amazing how they always find those things.
Yeah, well, I mean, whatever. Like, how old? My car is like 8 years old. I mean, this stuff is bound to break down, especially in the Civics, which is really bad. Either way, but, you know, wouldn't you know it, I bring my car in to get those things fixed and I'm willing to now, I've accepted the fact that I'm going to pay for those things. And they call me back and tell me that even bigger issues are found. And again, it's like, I know people are going to tell me like, don't pay for it. Like go to other people. But like at this point, I don't give a shit. I just want to have air conditioning back in my car. So now I'm stranded. Cause like, I don't have a car. We ended up having to like walk way more than we intended to, in this heat. So
you can borrow my car. Oh, I'm serious. I hate having to park this thing constantly. At least you have a parking lot. You can or a driveway.
Yeah. Maybe I'll consider that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's all yours. Yeah, that's nice. I'm the update from Friday is I am off to I got my legal document from the police on Monday. It was as thought that it has to do with my
A lot of people don't even know what you're talking about because that was a paywall show.
Well, then guess what? I'll give everyone an update on Friday. That's when we can do it. This is like shooting an angle on Collision, and then people on Dynamite are like, "Where's the video package?" You know what
sure.
I mean? So we need a recap of Friday's discussion. Well, to rewind, last year I was at a red light. I got rear-ended. Long story short, my car was totaled, and the guy who hit me ended up getting charged. So Friday, I received in the mail. Well, guy dropped off a notice that I did not answer the door in time. And it was just, I need to have this document delivered by Toronto Police Services. I have no idea what this is. They would not tell me over the phone what it is. I had to go in person. So I did that on Monday. And I did deduce that most likely this had to do with this case. Or I'm getting sued for something that I just am not expected to see. But the guy was like, "Do you know what this is for?" I was like, "I have a pretty good idea what it's for." And he's like, it's your car accident you were involved in last year." I'm like, "Yes, yes, I understand. I have to go to court." He's like, "Actually, you can go in person to court or you can join by Zoom." I was like, "Oh,
ooh,
really?
That's great.
Let me think about that for a minute. You mean that I can be in my pajamas and testify at 7 in the morning or I could wake up and go to court? I'll take the Zoom option. Do I have to do anything else beforehand?" Nope. Log in at this address. I'm like, okay, great. I will testify for 15 minutes. I hope tops. I'll have my coffee. I'll be
Thank
great.
Thank goodness for technology.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes. Do I do anything with the backdrop for my special court appearance, or should I just should I spruce it up a little way?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe do you have a
should I have all my race cars set up behind me to add to the theme of the court proceedings at all?
Sure. Yeah.
Should I have a car coming behind me that I don't see until it's too late? Okay. Anyway,
I hope for I hope justice prevails, John. That's all I hope for.
It already did because I was already I did lose a car out of this whole thing, so there was.
Mm-hmm. And you should be really angry.
The air conditioning was great on that car, by the way.
Oh,
so
no.
It's gone. All right, we have an update regarding the cash in. All right, and we are cashing out. That is a conclusion there. So the cash in is still happening on Saturday, July the 6th, but we are having our WrestleMania 7 transfer to a more reasonable sized venue. Okay. We overshot this one. Okay. We're a very honest bunch here. We're putting our cards on the table. Okay. I think we would have had like by the walk up and such, I think we would have had a respectable number, probably, you know, in the 30s or so, but this was not going to be an overwhelming success at the venue that we had booked. So we're going to a more modest one that is going to be more reasonable, both for size and for cost. And thus we are moving things over to the wide open bar, the unofficial home of Poison Rana. And this is located at 139A Spadina Avenue. It's not all that far from where Yuck Yucks is, and it's about 15 minutes from the Scotiabank Arena. So what we are going to be doing is we are still going to be doing a media panel, but it's not going to be open to for a live audience. What we are going to do instead, since everyone's in town and we promise this, we're going to record the wrestling media panel with Brandon Thurston, Stephanie Chase, Benno, myself, and Wei. And then we're just going to release it to be determined the release details, but everyone will get a chance to hear it at some point down the road after we record it. And then at 2 p.m., we're just going to do a hangout at Wide Open. So if you're in town, you can just show up at Wide Open, 139A Spadina Avenue. We are going to be in touch with those that bought tickets because we are going to honor those people that have tickets. Either you can have a refund or you can come and sit in for the wrestling panel live.
I'm just going to issue refunds to everybody and still give them the offer. If they want to sit in on the panel, they can sit in.
Okay, that's cool. So anyway, we got a curveball here, so we're just rolling with it. But this is honestly, this is the best option, and it's still going to be a fun hangout for everyone. So if you are in town for Money in the Bank and want to drop by, Wei and I will be there. Braden, Davey, other members, Dan Lavransky's coming, members of the Post Wrestling and Poison Rana communities. John Cena is coming up for it. So you'll still get a chance to hang out with a lot of people in the Post and Poison Rana communities.
I'm honestly, like, this was a really good day for us because
it could have been a lot worse.
The great people at Yuck Yucks were super cool about, yes, like, just the cancellation and not demanding any sort of, like, fee or anything like that. And
yes, unlike Koshe Urbe, we are not going to have any disparaging tweet because Yuck Yucks was amazing.
Yuck Yucks
was
great. We're going to
I honestly recommend them after how well they dealt with us. So.
Thank you, Yuck Yucks, and thank you, Wide Open. It's honestly way less pressure, I think, for us to have to like come up with things to do. Like, we just ultimately want to hang out with people, and you can come for free. So we just want to make sure that you're a fan. I think Davey suggested giving some sort of secret password or something at the door. Maybe we'll do that closer to the date. But this is going to be a much smaller place. So we're going from what might have been a pretty cavernous place to a place that I think will be pretty packed very quickly. So I'm looking forward to it. The cash in now at Wide Open, 139A Spadina Avenue, the afternoon of Money in the Bank.
Yes, and details to come on the wrestling panel, how we'll release it, we're still figuring out, but we're all in town, we're all going to get together, we're still going to do a show, like the five of us, a panel chat, and release it after Money in the Bank weekend, so mm-hmm. We will have details then. All right, before we get to Dynamite, we don't have much news to go through. During this period where we are having a lot of the news, we are putting up on Pollock and Thurston, which By the way, today we had two guests on the show. Lucas Sharpio was on talking about his coverage in Scotland this past weekend, and we had Eric McGregor on for an update on what's going on in the UFC antitrust case that got some renewed life last week when Judge Richard Boulware said he had, quote, serious concerns about the terms of this settlement. So it's this weird issue where, you know, Wade, this is like you, it's like you broke up with a girl and like you've mentally moved on, but now they want to go to couples therapy. It's like, we're kind of past this at this point for the plaintiffs. It's like, we can see this money in our, in the near future for us. And now it's what you think this might be worth going to trial, and we could risk having nothing. So it's this weird case where the plaintiffs essentially have to come and like almost downplay their case. Like the judge is saying, you guys presented such a strong case that I think you're getting undervalued in this settlement. You guys should be going for more. And the plaintiffs, it sounds like it's the plaintiffs are like, we're good. We're happy enough with this settlement, because you go to trial, there's always the risk you might not win. And $335 million is better than nothing.
But if the judge is the one saying this, I mean, is there a guarantee that you'd have this the same judge for another time?
I mean, it would still, like, we are many steps away. This is hardly this is something where this may not go anywhere. But if it were to go to trial, it would be a jury. And all it would take is one jury member that doesn't see the plight of the fighter side. And that's a win for the defendants. So it's a risky proposition when you're ultimately going to a jury trial. But it, at least from last Friday's hearing, was the judge feeling that, hey, he said serious concerns, not just concerns, serious ones. So they will have another hearing next week, and Eric McGregor gets us all caught up to speed on what's happening there. Did you see any of NXT featuring an appearance by Frankie Kazarian and Joe Hendry for about 10 seconds?
Have not had a chance to watch it yet, no.
Well, those are the key things. They have set up Javon Evans winning the Battle Royal, and then later in the night losing to Ethan Page. So they are very much involved. Like, your main event scene at this moment is Trick Williams, Ethan Page, Javon Evans, who is just a spectacular talent. Like, this guy is going to be something at the age of 20, and he's being positioned very highly in NXT, and also Sean Spears involved in this whole mix. So how this forms for Heatwave, they might go the multi-man direction with all these different people involved, but that was the key stuff coming out. And the Battle Royal featured Frankie Kazarian, who was in there for a while, and Joe Hendry, who came out and they gave him promo time, and then he was eliminated instantly. But I think they are going to play this up as a story that Frankie Kazarian cost him, and that they even did an exclusive segment for the digital side of Joe Hendry going into the backstage area and doing a promo with Shawn Michaels. And I think Joe Hendry did himself, like, a lot of people were negative on how quickly he was out of this Battle Royal, but they gave him his promo at the beginning, and this crowd went nuts for him as well. Like, this will be very interesting, because history would show you that anyone from TNA that comes in, like a Jordan Grace, and I would say now a Joe Hendry, and they get this kind of reaction, it's like, we're going to want these guys when their deals are up. And I think that's going to be the interesting part to watch, is how this relationship works and what kind of reciprocation that NXT provides for TNA. Like, yes, they send Tatum Paxley as a mystery opponent, but I mean, you couldn't even promote that. And I don't know if, but it's TNA, and they're going to, this is as key of a promotion as they've got going at the moment, is involvement with NXT.
I mean, WWE really does hold all the cards, you know, with a relationship like that. But if you're TNA, I still think all of this is a net positive, you know, like it's a lot of positive buzz attached to TNA. And ultimately, when you're talking about guys that are coming in, like a Jordan Grace and a Joe Hendry, they're immediately receiving that sort of attention above so much of the rest of the roster. It's giving people the impression that they're missing out by not watching TNA, because they have a lot of great talented people that just don't really have the platform.
Last news items before we go to Dynamite, regarding the schedule that is coming up in the next few days. On when is Rewind Away going to be dropping?
It'll be Friday, yeah. For while MCU Later is taking place, being released on Thursday afternoons, I'm experimenting with releasing on Friday mornings because I think people tend to listen to their podcast more so on the morning drive. It also gives me a little bit of time to like edit the shows. By the way, for this one, we're actually recording in the Thursday evening anyway, so it'll be Friday morning.
So this will be the big musical breakdown of WrestleMania the album with Wei Ting, Nate Milton, and Chris Ely, and I look forward to this. Their past reviews have been met by plenty of acclaim, so this will be their third musical review. So that's coming out Friday on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and with that show on the cafe, we are going to make Rewind to SmackDown free for this week only on Friday night, featuring CM Punk in Chicago. So that's going to be a special free show. Members of the Post Wrestling Cafe will still have the option to call in, and that's an exclusive feature for cafe members. We also have Collision Course this Saturday, and yes, MCU Later will drop on Thursday with a review of X-Men Origins Wolverine, which unfortunately
John Pollock's favorite movie.
Unfortunately, that was the year the Academy snubbed Liev Schreiber and Hugh Jackman out of what I thought would have been a sheer win, a sweep for the Marvel fans out there. I mean, it's I legitimately enjoyed this movie. I thought it was. What do you remember hating about this movie?
Mm.
All of it?
Everything.
Wow, really? You didn't like the origin remember. Story?
I knew the origin story from the comics.
I didn't. So I was watching all this fresh.
I can understand why you would enjoy it. Yeah, sure. It's cool. It's well done.
What's it called? Adamantium bullets that Stryker had. Was that a little hokey?
No, not at all. Makes total
that
sense.
Took away fact, his memory. After you like just gave me like a scathing reaction on Monday. I avoid any reaction to this. And you,
that's the
you,
way to do it.
You were my first. Ugh, you like that? So I
no,
did,
I did not.
I did do
I did
some research, and
way.
this was not a pleasantly reviewed film. So I had to find out why. And the adamantium bullets seemed to be, man, that's how they explain the memory loss. I was like, how are you gonna erase a guy's memory? Like, what, he's gonna play tackle football maybe?
I guess there are a wide number of ways. I to be fair, I don't remember that much of it because it's been that long. I was shot up with adamantium bullets. So I look forward to a refresher from WH Park and Rich Fan. And maybe John Pollock is right all these years later. I'm open to that.
Yeah. Let's all wish Ian McKellen a quick recovery. Had like a bit of a fall. Had to go to the hospital this week. Did you see that?
Oh, he did. No, I did
yes.
not.
Yes. Hmm. So all the best to Magneto. All right, so that is what is coming up later this week. Again, postwrestlingcafe.com is where you can support Post Wrestling, where you get multiple bonus shows per week, including our June run of the Double Shot with three reviews thus far of Who Killed WCW. Next week, Wayne and I will review the final episode, and we will be joined next week on the site by Evan Husney, as we had him on before the first episode aired. We'll chat with him in advance of the fourth episode airing and look forward to that. So Wei's going to jump on with me for that interview too. And then we'll talk about the sale of WCW.
Mm-hmm. I'll hold a 1 hour long discussion about Vince Russo on the latest review of Who Killed WCW episode 3. And by the end of it, John was
motivated to write about it, which I did today in my news update.
There you go. Is it out of your system? Can you
it is cleansing too. I didn't go into the, I watched that episode and it was just like, oh, we're gonna have to talk about this again, and then you just got me going in this episode. That's how I felt during a lot of this episode. And then it's like this process for me. I talk about it for an hour and then I've got to write about it for multiple hours. This is how my life like goes away.
Today's Pollock's news update, like John said, a whole essay looks like here about the death of WCW under Vince Russo, or
and a little bit on TNA. Today is their anniversary of their very first show. They're 22 years old today.
Very interesting. Okay. Yep. That's all up at postwrestling.com.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Wei Ting and I are reviewing the Mr. McMahon series on Netflix with 6 straight days of reviews. The Double Shot will be coming back on Friday, September the 27th. We will be doing a free review of episode 1, and then episodes 2 through 6 will be covered exclusively for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Plus, this month, MCU Later is back covering Agatha All Along, and Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have you covered for New Japan's Destruction in Kobe. PostWrestlingCafe.com. We head to Fairfax, Virginia, where Dynamite was held tonight, and a bit of late movement for tickets, at least over the last couple of days. They almost reached 4,200 tickets distributed, which for Dynamite these days, it's not a given they're going to be hitting 4,000 tickets. So it was on the upper end of some of the numbers they've been doing of late. And this was opened with Excalibur stating, "It's Juneteenth, you know what that means." And that took us into the episode, which also of note that they did announce earlier in the day that the Dynamite and Collision before All In, they're going to Cardiff, Wales for those shows. So they'll do those on August 21st, the Wednesday. They'll do a double taping, and this will be the first UK editions of Dynamite and Collision. And I think that at a time when, you know, the AEW product, like we don't always get those red hot crowds like we used to for AEW. I think going to an international market, it's like you talk about a product that is going to have such a hunger for it, especially going into such a major event. I think this is a very smart tactic on their part to go to Cardiff just for these. You could argue they should maybe be exploring more international touring when, you know, things are not as hot in the U.S. from a drawing perspective.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of extra costs attached to something like this, perhaps, but you know, as a fan and viewer of these shows, it's going to make a huge difference on screen. And I have to imagine there's still a big enough craving for AEW over there that these shows should be a pretty hot ticket.
Starting things off, it's our commercial free match between MJF and Roosh. Almost exactly 6 months since MJF's last match at World's End. And we start things off where they have a furious striking exchange. MJF starts to strut, and then the Rick Rude hip thrust. And early on, he's bleeding from the nose, but was not too significant. It took all of about 3 minutes into this match for Taz to ask, "What city are we in?" And he says, I just show up. And they informed him they were in Fairfax. There's a big MJF chant as Roosh pulls up on the bull's horns and gets jumped as he does the Tranquilo pose. And MJF feigns a knee injury, or does he? And this leads into a pile driver spot and gets caught with a belly to belly in the corner. And as MJF is on the turnbuckle, it's the week of those slippery ropes, because MJF slips off the rope. And dude, the quickest reaction from Excalibur, let's give proper credit, it was Taz who said, "Oh, maybe his knee was injured earlier." Mm-hmm. I mean, he was so quick on top of it that you had to applaud just the quick reaction to it. Roosh then takes MJF all around the ring into the various guardrails. He's playing to the camera, and then he gets a chair, and he's warned by Paul Turner. So he slides the chair across the apron as they're on the floor. And Paul Turner, worried that maybe this chair will come to life or do something, has to leave the action, leave these two men, and turn his back to go after this chair and make sure this chair is in a secure position away from the combatants. So by turning his back, this allows Roosh to take out like his entire cable distribution here and whip MJF with cables and choke him while Paul Turner is tending to a chair. MJF then runs into a belly-to-belly off the apron to the floor, but he makes his big comeback with punches in the corner, a heat seeker, and the brain buster that he is using as his finisher to win in 14 minutes and 19 seconds. And I thought like a very good opening match, and MJF certainly did not feel like a guy that had been off for 6 months, seemed to just be right back into the mix of things. And Roosh, I thought this was a really good performance from him too.
I thought so too, yeah. Definitely no ring rust on MJF. Very like good technical work here. Very good selling throughout most of this match, as Roosh took almost he was certainly leading it in terms of offense, and he looked really good, high in intensity, very aggressive. So in what I thought was always going to be a bit of a sort of unfortunate role for Roosh, you know, being MJF's first opponent coming back from such a big layoff. It's actually resulted in like a pretty impressive run for Roosh, you know, a lot of good airtime, promo battle even with MJF, and Roosh has actually really looked good and impressed a lot. So I think he did enough to leave a lasting impression despite losing MJF here. Great crowd work from MJF. I mean, for a commercial free match, like, was this the type of match that like would have been raving about afterwards? I don't know if it necessarily got to that very high standard that I think we've come to expect out of AEW, but it was still, like, for a return match, a very good, substantial TV outing.
The Cage of Agony, who are all over this show, appear on the screen, and they have a message. They've been sent by the EVPs to go after MJF and his bad shoulder, and the guy that they have enlisted to take out the man that will attack the limb that was previously injured. It's Hechicero. And Toa, I think, reacted to half of Long Island. He just screamed at this reaction. And listen, I have no doubt that there's a story attached to this. But at the end of this, I was like, and at first you're thinking, is this really going to be the opponent for MJF in Long Island on the pay-per-view? Great wrestler in Hechicero, but I almost wonder if maybe we should have done this the opposite way. Hechicero is the TV match to attack this shoulder and see how it holds up. And you go with Roosh at the pay-per-view. I just didn't think that they'd be going for someone that is not going to jump off the page to a lot of the fan base for MJF in his hometown. But it's a match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a disappointing match, and I think that's fair to say. You know, you for MJF's first pay per view match back, just forget that. Like his match in Long Island, you know, even for a TV outing, I think you'd want something a bit more special in terms of star power. In ring, this will probably be quite good, but I think you want something either with a bit more build and story or simply star power. But for a pay-per-view, hopefully both. And this certainly doesn't really have the star power that I think you'd come to expect from an MJF pay-per-view match.
There's very little that they have left to announce for Forbidden Door that's going to move any last-minute ticket sales. MJF's opponent was going to be one of those matches for Long Island. You can argue that MJF may be the most popular person on this entire card.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, it's significant in that it's our first CMLL versus AEW match at Forbidden Door. But beyond
and I expect the match to be excellent. Like, that's going to be everyone's defense of this. But, I mean, name me an opponent that you could find among the candidates that is not going to be a great match. This will certainly be that and then some. But is this going to... is this maximizing MJF's potential on this show? I don't think it is.
Doesn't feel big enough for a pay-per-view.
So Renee, I guess we're just going to get weekly installments of the Mark Briscoe word of the day. And this week, the word of the day is vengeance and redemption. We have two words of the day, and they again refer to them as the conglomeration, which this week has Dante Martin joining Kyle O'Reilly, Orange Cassidy, and Mark Briscoe. And then Jack Perry just wanders past, and Mark looks at him. Get your ass out of here, Jack Perry. And they all walk off, and Orange Cassidy is left to give a bracelet to Renee Paquette.
I think Mark Briscoe continues to show that he's an unbelievable promo, and it almost feels at this point like they're putting Mark Briscoe among this very uncharismatic group of Orange Cassidy and Kyle O'Reilly, and now I guess you could say Dante Martin as well, just to show off how charismatic Mark Briscoe is. So if that is their intent, they're very successful at it. They're also now like emphasizing by having the other wrestlers acknowledge how great of a talker Mark Briscoe is, and continuing to really kind of spotlight him in these moments. So I hope this means a constant role for Mark Briscoe on Dynamite, and that he's actually going to advance himself within the AEW sort of star power system.
He's going to graduate from Ring of Honor is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Face-to-face time with Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay as the men come out for their segment. And Ospreay states how he showed last week he is capable of carrying the weight of both belts after he tore Swerve's title off his shoulder. He said, I once held three belts over three continents at the same time. And Swerve says that I am the best wrestler in the world. We've taken different paths over the past 5 years, but now we intersect and he asks Ospreay, are you going to need help from Don Callis and the family like you did last year at Forbidden Door to beat Kenny Omega? And Ospreay makes it very clear, I don't need Don Callis and I don't need the family. And just in case you wanted to make this painfully clear that we are breaking away, they show the reaction of Don Callis and the family to this statement by Will Ospreay, and maybe telegraphing some involvement in this match potentially. And Ospreay goes over last year after beating Kenny Omega. It was the summer of Ospreay, listing off his opponents that he beat, including Kazuchika Okada and Chris Jericho at All In, and said, while you had a hit row, I had a hit list, and I didn't miss one of them. I can see Wembley on the horizon. This is your first pay-per-view main event as champion. And what if that kill shot of yours is just centimeters off? And no matter what move I use, you're going to wake up without the title. And if I used the Tiger Driver, you wouldn't walk out of that ring alive. Swerve explains, this is your first pay-per-view main event, period. And you're in this main event because of me. He says, I got rid of all my friends, unlike you. Anyone that came from my title are bodies now. I put them in the grave. What if I break your leg? Are you still going to be Will Ospreay to these people then? Will the people care about you if you only have one arm? I'm still, without this, I'm still a mogul. I'm still an entertainer. I'm still a podcaster. I'm going to steal this line for the future.
I know.
And Ospreay needs to sacrifice all the things he loves for this. Are you willing to do that? Because that includes your wife and your son, and I don't think you're ready for that. And Ospreay stares a hole into him and says, don't ever speak about my son again. Don't make this personal. And Prince Nana cuts the tension, stating to save that emotion and fire for each other. And when he proclaims whose house, Will says, my house. And as he goes to leave, Swerve cuts his theme and asks, what if I want to make this personal? Because with this title, it's always personal to me. So give my regards to Al and Harry. And Will jumps into the ring, gets into his face, and ends a outstanding segment between these two.
Just excellent. Excellent. Classic one-on-one pro wrestling promo battle. No contracts involved. Like, really nothing else. Just two guys and two microphones. And just exactly what why they want to beat the shit out of each other. We're again seeing more of that Swerve Strickland baby kidnapper, and I'm very happy to see it. Yes, he's still a baby.
This was babyface version. He's not breaking and entering. He's just invoking the child's name.
He is threatened. Well, you're right. But he hasn't done
anything yet. We still have a go home show.
Don't want a former home invader to mention your child's name, you know, and that
they are overseas too, so that's a long flight for Swerve to go.
Sure. Yeah. But I think that is what kind of made us fall in love with Swerve, and for him to even use it as a way to trash talk, to get into this guy's head, I think is just a great way of elevating the tension between the two. And for us to recognize that part of Swerve is still inside of him, that he's still a guy who's willing to do anything to retain it. He also, like, I think got into like really good sort of logic or just like had really good reasons for like why he might be better than Will Ospreay, despite like I think the entire world at this point recognizing Ospreay as a pretty much a better wrestler than anybody in the world or on this roster at least. And Swerve's sort of angle of saying that I'm not just a wrestler, I am this and I'm this and I'm this is I think valid, you know, at least in wrestling trash talk. With that, like, once you retire, Ospreay, or if you're injured or if I injure you and you no longer have professional wrestling, what can you fall back on? And I'm sure Will Ospreay could be a great podcaster. Maybe he'd be a great rapper too. We don't know, but you know, Swerve has, I guess, accomplished those things. And as an angle to sort of like place him above Will Ospreay, while I think the whole world at this point kind of recognizes that in ring Ospreay is the better wrestler, I think Swerve managed to find a good angle. We already know in ring it's going to be outstanding, but like on the mic, these two are delivering substance and they're delivering quality. So a very highly successful segment that definitely elevated my interest.
Yeah, I mean, this one has, it's clicked on all levels. You have the intrigue, I think, of people believing like the outcome is not a clear-cut answer. I think if people were to see Swerve retain, I don't think that's shocking. And I think if you were to go and make the argument of, like, Will Ospreay winning, I think that's less the opinion of most people, but can't be out there either that they could go with mm-hmm. with that one. That you're probably going to have a series of matches between these two in the coming months as well as a
perhaps.
Potential. Yep.
But heading to Forbidden Door, like this feels like it's the biggest match AEW can make at the moment. You know, this is like without a doubt, not even debated, every bit the feeling of a main event for a pay-per-view. And I love that.
Callis and the family react to this segment with Trent Barretta stating that he betrayed them. And Don Callis calms everyone down, says it'll be fine. And they leave with Kyle Fletcher alone, looking very conflicted as the one with the closest relationship to Will Ospreay and realizing, oh, man, I'm going to be caught right in between this power play.
I'm very happy to see that for Kyle Fletcher. You know, like at this point, the Callis family like has a lot of members. They've had a lot of members. Some of them aren't around anymore, but like the ones that are remaining are still kind of lacking in individual identity. And at least for Kyle Fletcher, it seems like they're singling on him by giving him at least a unique perspective on everything that's going on. So it promises a bigger Kyle Fletcher story in the upcoming weeks, perhaps joining Ospreay in his upcoming exit from the Callis family, or maybe more likely turning on Will Ospreay and having that program become a thing. So it's very good for Kyle Fletcher.
Next was our now weekly all-star multi-man tag match. And I love these matches, but my God, is it like you should just see like the smoke coming from my laptop as I'm trying my best. Zack Sabre Jr., Kyle Fletcher, Konosuke Takeshita, and Roderick Strong taking on Orange Cassidy, Mark Briscoe, Kyle O'Reilly, and Dante Martin. No Don Callis out with his family members. And everyone starts brawling except for Orange Cassidy and Zack Sabre Jr., who just take the ring as Cassidy casually puts on his elbow pad and they start off. Briscoe brings a chair into the ring. Aubrey Edwards not showing any kind of concern like Paul Turner did earlier. She understands, hey, like the more the better. And this chair got utilized. Kyle O'Reilly applied this knee bar through Roderick Strong for about an hour through the ropes. He just held on to this forever. And Briscoe dives onto Fletcher. And we just see, first of all, Dante Martin, I thought looked fantastic in this match. And maybe there's something I enjoy about like these 8-man tags. It's kind of like speed dating for wrestling where if there's a combination that doesn't work for you, well, you're going to get another combination within a minute and you're going to get all this mixing and matching. No one is going to overstay their welcome. And it just showcases like, boom, it's like watching highlight clips. And Dante Martin was made for this kind of presentation. He was just fantastic, I thought.
And if there is a pairing you did enjoy, well, maybe you can ask him out on a second date at a pay-per-view.
Well, I was ready for Zack Sabre Jr. and Kyle O'Reilly to go steady because when they locked up, it was like I'm watching this match and then all of a sudden I'm watching Kyle O'Reilly and Zack Sabre Jr. square off. And I'm like, we're watching like these two and they didn't do a whole lot together, but still like it's whetting your appetite for something in the future. And it just shows you like what they have at their disposal. I just really like the concept of these multi-man matches. To go to break, Dante performs a double springboard cannonball to everyone on the floor. And if you were watching on Triller, you got the picture-in-picture commentary from Taz, who noted, Dante Martin, obviously watching the best of Taz, volume 5, stealing all my offense. These guys had a night on these commercial breaks. At one point, like they were just going off and they alluded to, oh man, we just got something really stiff in our ear. It was almost like they got like a warning to like, okay, cut it out. That's what it sounded like. They go in like these commercial breaks. Like, it is three different people in between when they're in commercial break, it's like, it may as well be we're off the air. We do not care. And they are just trying to break each other's balls for the entire commercial. And then, welcome back to Virginia, the site of the All-Star 8-Man. And we're right back into like on-air mode. So They multiple times brought up Dante's injury the last time he was in a ladder match as a prelude to his involvement in the TNT ladder match coming up next weekend. Dante is attacked by the entire oppositional team when he lands an enziguri on Konosuke and tags Briscoe, so he's in, and we get a froggy bow off the top to Konosuke, the bombs away knee drop from O'Reilly, a knee drop off the top by Dante, and then finally Orange Cassidy comes off with his elbow drop before Kyle Fletcher makes the save. Kyle's in with a guillotine onto Kyle Fletcher, but Roderick just lifts O'Reilly into a backbreaker. We go through all of these different spots, including Briscoe off the apron with a blockbuster, Zach stopping a stun dog, the Zach driver gets stopped, and then O'Reilly breaks up a European clutch attempt that Cassidy applied, and O'Reilly ends up taking the bullet for Orange Cassidy, getting him out of the way from a flying knee from Roderick Strong. But after Strong lands the knee, Orange Cassidy is able to capitalize, landing the orange punch, pinning Roderick Strong in 16 minutes and 41 seconds. I think that was an outstanding recap of a very really involved was. Match. I tried my best.
An all-star recap for an all-star eight-man tag, John. Very well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, this was a great match. You know, and it's really making a name for these sort of multi-man matches that you really can't justifiably call all-star, because there's no weak link in this mid-card, really. And every week getting one of these showcases is now starting to become a bit of a draw, especially when you throw in like a special attraction like Zack Sabre Jr. in there. I would even classify Dante Martin in this context as a special attraction, because you get to highlight the best things about Dante Martin in short spurts. It helps push your pay-per-view storylines as well, and doesn't really kind of sacrifice like any singles match. I think Zach fits in so well with this crop. Every combination we saw him with either Kyle O'Reilly or Orange Cassidy, or even Dante and Mark Briscoe for that matter, I think was interesting. So boy, would I love to see like Zach mix it up with like the AEW roster a bit more. If they're taking names for the Continental Classic from New Japan, like he'd be one of the first people I would choose. I am also really intrigued by the idea in this match of their usage of the sacrifice play in matches like this, where I mean, that concept is nothing new, but I feel like we saw it a bit more than usual here from both sides, where first you got to see Fletcher pushing Takeshita away so that he could eat a Dante high cross. And this is all mainly done because they want to protect the legal man. You know, I'm going to take this move so that the legal man can stay alive and, you know, continue our team's chances of winning the match. And then, of course, the finish came exactly as a result of that, with Kyle O'Reilly pushing Orange Cassidy away from Strong's knee so that Orange Cassidy could hit his move on Strong to win the match. It's not like it's going to lead to any sort of bigger story, but as a strategy for a multi-man match, I find that really interesting that now, at least in a match like this, it's being used as sort of a move in itself.
Yeah, it's a great way to get people on the show. It doesn't have to be limited to, you know, the conglomeration, but you know, 2 weeks in a row, I think that this is just a great just action-packed match you can throw onto Dynamite, and it worked again. I thought this was fantastic. Afterward, Jack Perry attacks Dante Martin, and Mark Briscoe goes to assist Dante. They go to the back. Konosuke is also getting involved, and Zack Sabre Jr. and Orange Cassidy remain in the ring. They don't get physical, as Cassidy just puts his hands into the pockets to end that segment, and it's going to be Zack Sabre Jr. against Orange Cassidy for the AEW title at Forbidden Door.
We love you, Ray.
YouTube.com/postwrestling.
Oh, my goodness.
Then we had a Mercedes Moné promo video about reacting to her win over Zeuxis last week and getting her ready for Stephanie Vaquer, and said, "It isn't arrogance, it's confidence. And she is able to do things that Vaquer has never done, such as walking the red carpet. And there's a price to pay when you mess with Moné, La Jefa."
I like both those things. You don't. There's a price to pay when you mess with Moné, I think is a good catchphrase. And I love La Jefa as a sort of specific, you know, to the market type of nickname for her. She sounded good here in this edited video, and it was like a well-produced video that's a retort to Vaquer's video from last week. And I guess at this point, like, are Mercedes appearances supposed to be, I guess, pretty infrequent on AEW TV, like at least in person?
I mean, she's there most weeks. This was a I wouldn't say it's like too often that we that she's not on Dynamite.
Right, but it's been 2 weeks now.
The Zouk-Zouk match, wasn't that last week?
Oh, shit, you're right. Yeah. I'm because I thought of the Vakur video. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Never mind. Yeah, I'm hyped for this match.
Don Callis approaches Roosh with an opportunity, and he just slammed the wall after being offered this opportunity. So I don't know how much of how interested he is in this plan. Maybe he's like, oh, no, getting recruited by Don Callis.
Yeah, the family is sort of becoming a bit of a catch-all for single heels in AEW. Like, I feel like we barely established Trent as part of the group, and now he's already, you know, trying to recruit Roosh, which I guess is fine. You know, like in New Japan Pro Wrestling, like, everybody kind of needs a faction. It opens the door for, like, multi-man matches to make sense, people to be involved in other people's feuds. It makes sense. I guess I do wish that individually they could craft a bit more identity for each person. And I guess they're starting off with Kyle Fletcher.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Wei Ting and I are reviewing the Mr. McMahon series on Netflix with 6 straight days of reviews. The Double Shot will be coming back on Friday, September the 27th. We will be doing a free review of episode 1, and then episodes 2 through 6 will be covered exclusively for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Plus, this month, MCU Later is back covering Agatha All Along, and Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have you covered for New Japan's Destruction in Kobe. PostWrestlingCafe.com. The Eliminator bout pits the Young Bucks against the Acclaimed, and they did a gimmick where Max Caster comes out and his microphone is muted to offset or prevent his rap. So we go back to the gorilla position, and there is Okada. I pressed the wrong button. I'm so sorry, bitch. Yeah. And this, I mean, this could just be his t-shirt.
I thought Okada was, like, so funny in this that I don't even think he needed to say bitch.
That's, you know, the catchphrase now, though. I mean, that is kind of...
It's everybody's catchphrase. Like, yeah, there are three bitches.
Yeah, we just followed the Mercedes video that had a bitch in it as well. And we would get another one with Saraya. This should be property of Okada at this point. He has officially owned the word.
The bitch crutch is, I guess, is the bitch exactly crutch. That.
That might be his new finisher. Get the Rainmaker. The bitch crutch.
But it's exactly that. It's a crutch for a lot of people who might, you know, need it just to ensure a reaction. And I think Okada's delivery is good enough now that it doesn't need something like that. He's managed to make people laugh in every single one of these appearances.
What if he called them a prick?
Better, sure. Okay. Yeah, vary it up. There are a lot of, like, you know, insults that you could use. Mm-hmm.
That's an underutilized one for AEW.
Prick, yeah. Oh, well, it doesn't guarantee a reaction.
You're right.
But I'm sure there's something he could else. Anyway, whatever. He's been great in all of these, and it's not just like the verbiage, certainly. It's all in his delivery, and I'm just so impressed. He's getting so over just doing these segments.
So this match started, and it took a while, I felt, for the crowd to get into this, but with Anthony Bowens, so he's been working with this taped up hamstring for a long time, and if there's one really, like, part of Anthony Bowen's game that stands out, it's selling his injury to the point that you're very concerned about him. Mm-hmm. And this match got to a point where the Bucks were excellent. Like, they're super kicking the hamstring, all their offense. And it was like, by the final couple of minutes, there was a lot of sympathy towards Bowens. And I think the belief was that, like, they are not going to be able to win this match. Caster is just constantly running in for saves, but he's getting thrown out of the ring, and they just beat down on Bowens and keep beating him down. And the Bucks even introduced this new double team sliced bread into a power bomb off of the turnbuckle.
It's made in Detroit.
That's a good, what's made in Detroit. Yes. So maybe, maybe a signal of things to come.
They've done it in the past, like, to the point where it's almost like kind of their, like, one of their not so often used, like, moves. But yeah, like, the suspicion is that it's going to lead to something.
Well, they hit this on Bowens, and he kicks out, and then Matt gets the tag belt, and Bowens ducks, and they nearly hit Rick Knox, but don't. And then he turns his back. Nick misses Bowens and clocks Matt with the title belt, and he is sent to the floor. They hit Matt with the arrival and mic drop and win. Big pop for the finish at 10 minutes and 18 seconds as Daddy Ass is out to celebrate with them. And Bowens is limping as the Acclaimed will get a future tag title shot. And I don't know if they throw this onto Forbidden Door, or if this is maybe for television.
I wouldn't be mad if this was television. I mean, for one thing, this does not feel Forbidden Door-ish at all. Like, I know Swerve versus Ospreay is technically just an all AEW match, but because Ospreay is still so fresh out of New Japan, it feels like it's a somewhat interpromotional. This just feels like two AEW teams wrestling each other. So I don't think Forbidden Door needs a match like this. I think TV, in fact, would really benefit from having it. So I wouldn't be upset if the Bucks didn't have a role. Good match.
You know, like, what? In 2 weeks, they're in Chicago at the Wintrust Arena. Like, that's a pretty big building that does not have a huge event. Like, I think this would be better served for sure. To be quite like, this is not going to move like a crazy amount of tickets, but you know, I'm with you. I think like your TV does need a boost, and it does feel like last week and this week it does feel like they are trying to plot several weeks ahead, so you're starting to see matches that are forming several weeks in advance. Even before they're announced, like, you can see directions of where they're going. And I think for TV, you need to have that too.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought Bowen Selling was maybe one of the standout things throughout the match. And then you have that unbelievable like pace of pressure from the Bucks with their offense as well. So that made this match fun. It was good. I'm sure their next match is going to be even better. I have to tell you, like, I'm not really that interested in the feud, though. And I think part of it just comes down to me, like, not really caring so much for the Acclaim to win these tag titles again. It just feels like it's a bit of a, you know, like, repeat programming. And I understand they probably won't win. But just to even see them, like, go for it, I guess I need to know what might be different this time around, you know, that would have me cheering for the Acclaim to win.
Yeah, there is a spark missing with the Acclaim that they had during the big trios run when they were, you know, riding that wave. And I think that is something that they just really haven't explored that part. And just being the opposition to the EVPs in power is, I don't know. I don't know if that's enough that people are sinking their teeth into. But I did think that overall the match, like, by the end, I thought they really did compel this crowd to get very excited for the finish. Samoa Joe and Hook are backstage. Joe's talking about rent in New York City. I think his theory is you talk down your city.
Yeah.
Don't praise like how great it is, because then the rent goes up because everyone wants to be there. I was like, I don't think that's how rent is going to be affected in New York City.
So I think this conversation started with Joe asking Hook about the best place for pizza. And Hook said the place, I think he said the Sbarro next to where he lives in Red Hook. And I haven't been there, but okay, sure. Sbarro in Red Hook, I guess. And Joe was like, see, that was a test. You shouldn't be talking up the Sbarro, you know, next to where you live. You should be talking down where you live. And as the reason why, like, these sort of non sequitur type of conversations that are captured before their actual segments, at least to me, are becoming pretty like interesting and fun to listen in on.
Do you think they plan these out, or do you think Joe sets these up where I'm going to throw something at you and you have to react in the moment to them?
I would love to know. Something tells me at this point, maybe they're still writing all this out, but who knows? Maybe they're great improv players.
They jump into the premier athlete's room, but they are gone. And there's a note where Mark Sterling expected this barbarism and issue a 3-on-3 challenge for Collision, and Shibata's voice note calls them, this is our fourth bitches of the night. We forgot about bitches from right. Shibata. So we have four people.
Yeah. I think at max, two people can use the bitch crutch. And beyond
rank them tonight. Who utilized them the best?
Well, Okada, first of all, like, okay, to the point where I don't like, but Okada's promo was good, I think, regardless of the bitch, right? And then Mercedes had said what?
Mercedes just called her a bitch. Yeah.
Honestly, like, when you're once you get the Okada bar, the rest just kind of trail beyond that and are kind of irrelevant. But sure, goofy bitches, yes.
Contract signing is hosted by Mariah May with Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa. Mariah May knows this match is going to be hard, loves them both, and then Mina tells her to shut up. And we get the longest promo from Mina Shirakawa. She calls Toni Storm a legend, a star in AEW, but as champion, you got soft. You got weak. And everyone says, we want Mina. No one wants Tony, and I'm going to take your title, and I'm going to take Mariah May. And Storm threatens to slap her tits off and says that this buffet is wide open. Grab a bowl and line up. A line that I definitely saw in my future of having to utter on a show. So both sign the contracts, and Mina says that Mariah May has to choose between them. But before she can make the choice, Saraya and Harley Cameron crash the party, and Saraya is sick of them, and she didn't come alone as Anna Jay jumps them from behind and joins in on the attack, and they are about to powerbomb Mariah May when Toni Storm fights them off with her shoe and sets up the table that they had for the contract signing into the corner and goes for the hip attack. Saraya gets out of the way, so Storm puts herself through the table as Mina Shirakawa and Mariah May have fled the ring and are watching from the stage, and that is how things ended.
Mm-hmm. I thought this segment came across really well. First of all, like I continue to be so impressed with Mina Shirakawa and how much of a character she's become on AEW television in a very short amount of time. She was very effective here in her promo, like very charismatic again in her delivery. And I think she at this point feels like a great candidate for somebody who would be a crossover star, maybe becoming eventually a full-time wrestler in North America if she chose, because you know we know she lives up to a high standard in ring, but the promo ability, at least for you know American television, is at a high enough level where she's getting a lot of attention, and you know you're able to tell stories with her, so I've been very impressed with her, and I like Anna Jay in this little stable with you know, Saraya and Harley Cameron. I think she's kind of been lost, you know, on AEW TV you only have so much room for women's storylines, and having factions kind of just, you know, automatically bundles a bunch of people, getting them onto TV, even if only one person is about to have the match. So it's at least something for Anna Jay to do.
There was a video for Claudio Castagnoli and Pac for their match tonight in the Owen Hart Cup. Claudio respects Pac. Let's do it for something bigger tonight. Let's do it for wrestling. No response from Pac if you want to do this for something bigger. They revealed the brackets for the Owen Hart Cup. So let's start with the men's side. So tonight we have Claudio and Pac. That winner will face the winner of Bryan Danielson and Shingo Takagi, which will in fact take place at Forbidden Door. On the other side of the brackets, it's Rey Fénix against Jay White and Jeff Jarrett against a debuting wrestler named Wild Card. And way we are this close to getting Jeff Jarrett and Rey Fénix on national television. And that, for all of the like the incredible pairings here, that is the where my eyes went to first. That okay. We might, now I don't feel that Jeff Jarrett is going to beat Wild Card. But first of all, who do you think Wild Card will be?
So I think it's significant that Jeff Jarrett is in the Owen Hart Cup.
Which they explained, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So because of like the Owen Hartness of it all, like I wonder if the Wild Card could be a member of the Hart family. Maybe a Davey Boy Smith Jr. I think would be a really interesting name to enter a tournament like this for obvious reasons. Who else do you think it could be?
See, I see it being, first of all, of these seven names, who could you see headlining All In, challenging for the title?
Bryan Danielson.
See, I don't see Danielson winning this, but that's contingent on the wild card. First of all, I thought one big omission here was MJF not being in this tournament.
Right. And why is that? Because he's a big name, but like, did he state anything about wanting to headline Wembley?
Shouldn't that be everyone's goal to headline Wembley? Like, I feel you do need an explanation for your ex-champion Samoa Joe not to be in this, for an MJF to not be in this. Now, the wild card, it could be one of those, but I don't see Samoa Joe or even MJF being a surprise. I think they would have announced that. I think, like, I was chatting with a friend of mine tonight, like, about it being Hangman Page, because I think people could buy Hangman Page and Swerve at All In, because If there is no pay, my thought is that we are going to get Danielson in the finals, potentially with Hangman. And I think it ends with Danielson, who cut that great promo about wanting to go to Wembley and what it means to him, and to lose in the final, and he has to be sitting there in the agony of defeat, and who does he hear mocking this loss for Danielson but Nigel McGuinness? And Danielson finally snaps and attacks Nigel after this year of being buried on commentary, and that's the Wembley match for Danielson.
I totally forgot about Nigel. Yeah, that has been sort of something that they've been pushing long-term, that maybe I could see more Danielson's direction.
But it means the wild card has to be, to me, it's like the only people that could win this that fit into that wild card would be a Hangman or an MJF. And I just
you're forgetting
why.
Jeff Jarrett. You're really writing Jeff Jarrett off.
I am writing off Jeff Jarrett here. Selfishly, I would love to see Rey Fénix and Jeff Jarrett in the second round, but I don't see that one happening.
Yeah. It's an interesting theory. I mean, Swerve versus Hangman as the main event of All In is a big enough match. Yeah, certainly. It's a legendary rivalry. But I'm also thinking, like, I feel more and more that, like, we have to wonder if Will Ospreay will be a part of that equation. Like, if Ospreay does beat Swerve, okay, for instance, who can you see opposing Ospreay in a final? That's something I think we might want to consider as well.
Facing him at Wembley?
At Wembley, mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's... If I'm looking at it as the options available, I think you have to throw Ricochet into any kind of discussion with a Will Ospreay.
Wild card Ricochet. Interesting. That's a great...
I don't even mean like Ricochet is the wild card in this tournament as opposed to, like, I don't necessarily see Ospreay winning this title, that Ospreay and Ricochet is the match for Wembley, and that could be for your international title. Point be it, like, this Wembley card is going to be something. Mm-hmm. That is my
thought. Yeah, it could be.
But anyway, this is a great looking tournament on paper, and again, the Danielson Shingo match will be at Forbidden Door. So let's flip on over to the women's brackets that we have. So tonight we got Chris Statlander and Nyla Rose, and that winner faces Willow Nightingale or Serena Deeb, that they have all but guaranteed is Willow and Statlander on TV. And then Deonna Purrazzo against Hikaru Shida and Mariah May against Saraya, that they did put some steam behind tonight with the attack by Saraya and company. So this one is, I would say, more wide open in terms of where you could go. But I think you have to at least give some thought to, Saraya going to Wembley, even if it's more of kind of a left field pick here. But Willow and Statlander are the two key pushed people in this role.
I kind of feel like tournament. I kind of feel like Mariah May might be my favorite. You know, especially if the champion at the end is going to be, it's still Toni Storm.
You're right.
Storm.
Yeah.
May versus Toni Storm in Wembley feels like it's an appropriate destination given the amount of time that I think is between Forbidden Door and Wembley and this whole Mina Shirakawa bit breakup that they're kind of teasing.
Yeah, that's a much better direction to go. Yes.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Those are the brackets. And then we go to Statlander and Nyla Rose. And Rose is climbing to the top when she's knocked to the floor. They go through picture in picture. Chris comes back with an axe kick. Her offense looked great here. And Nyla Rose was a good opponent for Statlander's offense. She misses with the 450 splash and is nailed with an elbow strike from Rose. Rose gets knocked off the top and it's a running boot. And Chris just lifts her up into a tombstone or a martinet, as you would say in Lucha, and wins the match. So it will be Chris Statlander against Willow Nightingale or Serena Deeb.
What does martinet mean?
I don't know what the exact translation is, but that was the...
Because a tombstone sounds far more intimidating.
Oh, the martinet was... It was the dreaded martinet in Lucha. Like, okay. That's the outlawed move in Lucha.
Gotcha.
I mean, treated with great reverence.
I'm enjoying Statlander as a heel. I'm enjoying seeing her wrestle.
I'm enjoying Stokely Hathaway as a heel.
Oh, yeah, he's great too. Well, but you know, Statlander in ring, she looks very confident wrestling this style. She's looks like she's having fun. So it's been very entertaining watching her don this new role. It was also very unique for us to see Nyla Rose as this sort of babyface underdog, you know, obviously as somebody who typically plays a monster. But tonight, it worked really well in front of what felt like a bit of a hometown crowd for her.
So Stokely comes out with Willow. Stokely cuts a promo about Willow, warning her that if you put a hand on either of us, we'll put you in jail like Justin Timberlake.
What happened with all that?
He got a DUI? DWI charge.
And he went to jail?
I don't know if he was actually...
You know, I did see the mugshot.
I saw the mugshot. So he was obviously, yeah, taken into custody over it. Oh, he says he's going to fight it. He's going to fight it vigorously.
Okay. Well, is there evidence? Is there video footage?
Of him driving drunk?
Yeah, or
I mean, under some intoxication.
Test? Or like doing some sort of test or something?
I didn't look that deep into it, but this is the second Justin Timberlake reference we've had on AEW programming over the last year.
What was the first?
Cry Me a River.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Willow appears on screen and wishes everyone a happy Juneteenth, and she is facing Serena Deeb on Rampage. It's like they're promoting Rampage. What a novel idea. And says there will be no more running in the second round. I'm going to whip your ass and I'll be one step closer to Wembley Stadium. Dude, Willow Nightingale has just come into her own in this character. Like, she's becoming a great promo and being able to like still be like the fun loving Willow Nightingale, but shift to this other gear that this feud needs.
I agree. Like, you could argue that this is a more storyline, like even a more storyline based role for her than what she had with Mercedes Moné. You know, she now has like vengeance, you know, to attach to this character. And I think it's coming across pretty well in both her and Statlander's work. They're doing a great job of keeping Willow in the conversation, you know, despite her no longer having the championship. Like, she feels at this point like a pretty constant presence on Dynamite and AEW TV in general. So I'm really glad to see that. And I think, you know, promoting this match ahead of the second round, yes, it does telegraph the finish of Deeb versus Willow, sure, but it does at least put a bit more interest into the result of Deeb versus Willow and gives you anticipation for Willow versus Statlander in the next round.
I think it's a net gain. I think it makes the Rampage match feel more important than a typical Rampage match. I don't think you're sacrificing a whole lot and you're going to deliver the bigger match, and it's going to have stakes attached to it.
Yeah.
Bro, nobody would see Serena Deeb winning, and that is why we had to go with Serena Deeb.
Yes.
Renee is with Private Party. They react to the Learning Tree segment last week and asked if they're going to take their aggression from last week into their match with Commander and Metalik onto Rampage. Glenn's like, yeah, I guess. And then Jericho walks in with Big Bill and Brian Keith, and he has another lesson about facing luchadors. Like, when I was Corazon de Leon in EMLL, and I always avoided the Martinet, the pile driver. And if that was proposed, I said, doesn't work for me, brother. And Bill then mentions that they'll be watching their match on Rampage, and they've got a match on Collision, and we will be watching. And it ends with Cassidy stating to respect the enda. What's the enda? The end of this, and Quinn stops Isaiah Cassidy from finishing. I don't think he was going to say bitch after this.
No, I don't think so. No. Either. Yeah.
They're trying.
What did you think of this week's Learning Tree segment? A far less involved Learning Tree this week.
I was ready for the end of the segment. Not a whole lot here. Listen, I think at this point now, people either like the character or they groan at the character. And I think that's that's the purpose. Like, this is not a character designed to have universal praise. And I don't think it wants to be it. It's a really weird character, but it's it was very self-contained to a backstage segment this week. So I don't think people could be too offended by this.
Yeah, I agree.
Then Daniel Garcia versus Rhett Titus. Wasn't the last time we saw Titus on Dynamite? Wasn't his car getting destroyed outside?
I think that was Dynamite, and that was a lovely scene. Like, he's like Gil on The Simpsons, you know, guy who just like down on his luck and just has bad shit happen to him all the time, including here.
He got beat in 60 seconds. Garcia just killed him here. Neck breakers, hit the guillotine into his finisher. 60 seconds. He won in 60 seconds. Dude, Matt Menard's on commentary and got a talking to by Taz and warned not to talk over the ring announcer as Justin Roberts announced Daniel Garcia as the winner.
I kind of feel like Rhett Titus is like a perfectly cast.
Look at this guy.
Well, yeah, this is pretty impressive.
Looks like an AI version of somebody.
Yes. But as a guy who just like has bad shit, like I mean, part of me like feels bad that he's like just sort of a jobber right now, you know, in AEW. But part of me also thinks like he can make this work and actually really get over as like a guy who just has the, you know, the worst luck, for instance. So I don't know. I don't know if they'll devote that much screen time to Rhett Titus, but it could be an interesting character.
It'd have been like Joe and Hooks storming the locker room for the Premier Athletes, and Titus had been given their locker room to change in, and he gets jumped.
Yeah, the lights are off, and like he just gets beaten up.
This will be our pet project, Rhett Titus.
Yes, we will get Rhett Titus a regular role. Yeah.
So the Cage of Agony are back. They attack Matt Menard for his faux pas of speaking over Justin Roberts, and they attack Garcia as well. They throw Garcia up into the air for a Brian Cage powerbomb when MJF runs down and he eyes Hechicero and goes after him. He's also doing a deal where he bites people now, and he does that to Brian Cage, hits a pair of low blows to Khan and Toa, and then Cage hits him with a German suplex. Hechicero wraps him up in a submission to go after the shoulder when Will Ospreay runs down, and the place is going nuts here, and together MJF and Will Ospreay fight off the Cage of Agony, and they go back to back and then face to face, and the crowd look at this guy in the front row. He knew what was up. This was like a big tease. You don't know when this is coming, but you know that down the road there will be a meeting of these two, and I thought this was a great little just breadcrumb to throw out there for everyone, the first interaction on AEW programming of MJF and Will Ospreay.
100%. I mean, we did have, of course, MJF mentioned Will Ospreay in his return promo. This just kind of continued to dangle that in front of us for at some point in the future. I love it when AEW does little things like this, you know?
They have not been doing a lot of this stuff. And last week and this week, it feels as though they're... And I'm sure there's areas that they are not long-term booking, but you are getting teases for the future. And I think that is... such a strength of a wrestling program when you know directions you're going and can start to drop hints. And they don't have to be 6-month plans. They could be just like the Willow Chris Statlander stuff or Ospreay and Daniel Garcia that you know you're going to get. But they are introducing your want for a lot of these directions. So they're not just coming out of nowhere. Renee catches up with Ospreay backstage. He doesn't care at all about MJF. He saw Daniel Garcia out there. And then Brian Cage, who's just all over the show. This is the most they've used Brian Cage in this one night than like the last 2 years. And he's being held back by security. And somehow this guy gets a title match out of this. Daniel Garcia can't catch a break. But Brian Cage powerbombs Daniel Garcia. And he gets an international title match on Collision Saturday.
Yeah. And at this point, we could probably safely say like the rankings just don't exist anymore, right? We haven't had an update in quite a while.
Well, and
not to say like this title ever relied on the rankings anyway, but I'm fine with it. Sometimes like all you have to do is just be involved in a brawl and just ask for a title shot and that's it.
And I'm thinking Ospreay retains and Saturday they set up Garcia and Ospreay for Buffalo next Wednesday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That show is next week. Mm-hmm. They gotta get that one announced. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Wei Ting and I are reviewing the Mr. McMahon series on Netflix with 6 straight days of reviews. The Double Shot will be coming back on Friday, September the 27th. We will be doing a free review of episode 1, and then episodes 2-6 will be covered exclusively for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Plus, this month, MCU Later is back covering Agatha All Along, and Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have you covered for New Japan's Destruction in Kobe. PostWrestlingCafe.com. Claudio Castagnoli against Pac is our main event in the Owen Hart Cup quarterfinal match, a rematch from last year's Death Before Dishonor, where Pac got injured, and they explained how when he got injured in that match with Claudio, he missed Wembley because of it. So Bryan Danielson is on commentary, and we got full out Cruiserweight Classic Bryan Danielson on commentary, where he was screaming about what's going on. This is unbelievable. I mean, Danielson he's so excited to be here. And he's talking about how he just lights up talking about how great it is to get hit hard. And he laughs about this. It's a trait of his. And he is informed via a match graphic that his match with Shingo Takagi is at Forbidden Door. And his response is, oh, got a live reaction here.
I don't know if he cares so much, you know, what show it's on. Okay, this so guy would be happy. He'd be happy wrestling Shingo in front of like 20 people, I'm sure.
Pac comes off the apron with a Rana and then a top rope Acai moonsault. There's big strikes by Pac. Claudio fires up and then gets out of the way of a Black Arrow and hits a running European uppercut that Danielson just broke the decibel meter for. It was live and loud here. We needed a WWE's counter. And then the giant swing is followed by a big lariat, goes for the Ricola bomb, but it's turned into a brutalizer. Claudio's fighting it, rolls out and applies the sharpshooter, moves to the crossface, but Pac turns it into a cover. And then they do this crazy sequence. They're going back and forth with all these different covers. And then it's a crucifix by Pac that catches Claudio for the victory. I love the ending sequence that we didn't do it with just, you know, your finisher. I love that it was a sequence. And then afterwards, Claudio will not shake hands and he goes to the floor. Danielson's trying to give him advice. Hey, it happens to all of us. And Claudio just storms off that he has lost. And we are going to get Pac most likely against Bryan Danielson at a future date in the second round.
Yeah. Yeah. Although Pac versus Shingo, I think would be awesome too. You know,
really. In a different world, we would have Shingo Takagi and Jeff Jarrett in the finals, but
yeah. Have these two wrestled before in Dragon Gate? Yes. Yes, they have. 2011. These two had a match, Pac and Shingo Takagi.
Pac and Shingo, yes.
I'd love to see that again. Yeah, this is a really, really great match, I think, as you would expect, you know, between Pac and Claudio. I'm very interested to see the character direction of Claudio Castagnoli. I guess this is him flirting with a heel turn of some sort, or just some sort of turn into like a bit more of a harder edge Claudio, who is sick of losing.
Which is funny because that was Pac's whole thing coming into this match, was he's had this terrible comeback and he's been losing all these big matches.
Mm. Well, I think he's going to run into a bit of a wall against Bryan Danielson. But you never know. I mean, maybe, are we discounting Pac from winning this? Yeah, he's probably not main eventing Wembley, Pac.
Well, I mean, listen, I wouldn't predict that being the outcome, mm-hmm. but I do see Danielson ending up like somehow with Nigel, and you could do the story about Pac missing Wembley last year and mm-hmm. dangling that as his story in the final that people could get into. I don't see him winning it.
Sounds like it'd be a great promo for him to cut.
Well, that would be maybe. I mean, they kind of cut it for him during the match with Excalibur, but mm-hmm. I mean, it would be a low percentage chance of him getting past Danielson, but it's not zero. There's always a possibility. So then, literally in the last 30 seconds, they had to promote Rampage, Collision, and Dynamite next week. We just got graphic after graphic. Rampage will have Serena Deeb against Willow, Leo Rush against Action Andretti to qualify for the ladder match, Private Party against Commander and Metalik. Then Collision on Saturday has Ospreay against Brian Cage for the international title, Jericho and Big Bill against Private Party. They casually just drop in Kazuchika Okada versus Ultimo Guerrero in an eliminator bout for the Continental Championship. You didn't even catch that, did you?
I didn't even catch it. I'm sorry.
Like, that's how fast this stuff was going. They didn't promote the Hook, Joe, and Shibata match with the premier athletes, but they did state that earlier in the show. And then there was a graphic that read MJF in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
Collision is in Allentown, Pennsylvania. So I was a little confused.
It was for July 8th, I think.
July 6th.
July 6th, yeah.
They're in South Haven, Mississippi, which is basically Memphis. It's like 15 minutes apart. So did this say July 6th on it?
Yes. Yes.
It did say July 6th on it. I thought it just said...
It was like Collision. Promoting it for an on sale.
Gotcha. Okay, well, it wasn't an error then. And then Dynamite next week in Buffalo has Jay White against Rey Fénix in the Owen Hart Cup, Swerve and Ospreay teaming up against Gates of Agony, and then Toni Storm, Mariah May, and Mina Shirakawa against Saraya, Harley Cameron, and Anna Jay. So we have two matches of opponents teaming up before Forbidden Door.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff, and I don't think I really paid attention to any of it.
I did not, John. I understand that they're trying to reduce how much they can promote and stuff, but like this, I can't imagine. Like, if you missed Ultimo Guerrero, then that's on this presentation.
But it's the type of thing, first of all, like, to satisfy people that feel like they should be mentioning all these things on air. And like, we all get caught up by the time the event, you know, takes place anyway, right? You know, you either find out through a little blurb like this, or you find out online afterwards. So I don't really mind either way.
What if they spend 20 minutes going over all the matches that they have booked and we do long interviews with each person? No, I'm kidding. I thought Dynamite was another great show. I thought that last week and this week, I thought these were two of the better Dynamites they've done in a long time. And it's not just the wrestling, which I thought the MJF Roosh match I greatly enjoyed. I really enjoyed the eight man. The Acclaim match, as I said, it took a while to get going, but I thought it peaked by the end. Statlander and Rose was fine. Daniel Garcia was a minute. And the main event was very good. But more importantly, I feel there's a direction. The tournament for the Owen helps, Forbidden Door helps. Wembley, I think, will help that throughout the summer, that you're starting to see more of a direction building to this giant show. It just feels like a better managed show, and that you're introducing things that might not pay off immediately, but they are introducing. And I thought for 2 weeks in a row on Dynamite that they have found like a format and presentation that seems to be checking off a lot of boxes.
I think Forbidden Door is looking in really good shape. You know, the main event, first of all, really feels like an incredibly strong main event. Last year was Okada versus Danielson, which was a dream match that is very tough to top. And I think certainly Ospreay versus Omega is going to be a really tough match to try to top. That was that match show of the year for certainly a lot of us, maybe last year. Forbidden
Door.
I think
it was my show of the year.
Yeah. So this year is going to be really tough for them to top it. But man, Swerve versus Ospreay really feels like a strong main event. And again, it's no debate, you know, that's going to be the thing that'll probably go on last. But I also think Mina Shirakawa versus Toni Storm is a story that's being well told. It's simple to understand. And I think there's a good level of star power, which you wouldn't expect for just, you know, a newcomer from Stardom as well. And I also think MJF versus Hechicero is a bit of a head scratcher, honestly, you know, for Forbidden Door. I hope in the weeks ahead they really, really make Hechicero.
I mean, he's the hired hitman, the submission ace that's going to destroy this guy's arm. Like, there's a story there. It's a great match, but you're right.
But on paper,
like,
it does not jump out. And what is an MJF going to do to try to elevate the status of a Hechicero versus MJF match?
Like, to me, yeah. MJF in Long Island is the closest AEW has to a CM Punk in Chicago. And that's what you're putting. Like, it's a match on the show. Like, that could be the opener on Forbidden Door, which is fine.
Do we see Tetsuya Naito at any point?
The tour for New Japan, because
Mox versus Naito is a match that has really been sort of under promoted. Certainly on AEW TV.
Let me just look at the New Japan schedule. So this tour, next week is what day? The 26th. This tour, after the 23rd, they're off till July the 3rd. So that they could be on for next Wednesday. That would give them enough time to get the key people over, like Shingo, Naito, the people that you want to push. So I would hope you get a big Moxley. You need a Moxley Naito segment next week.
Yeah, or even just a video package, you know, which might be fine. Like, Naito is, he kind of sells himself, you know. Big Moxley promo, maybe. Yeah.
Did you see what happened to his phone?
Yes.
Moxley's phone?
Yeah, he
might be
in
done
fire.
With phones. I mean, this guy has it figured out.
Throw them in the campfire. Yes.
I'm envious.
Maybe he'll upgrade to or downgrade to a pager, you know, just so his family could get in touch with him. He seems like he might be a pager guy.
He seems like a burner phone kind of guy.
Like a Nokia type of thing.
Yeah, like just flip phone, and when he's done with it, just tosses it.
Gotcha. So for those out of word, this is what John was talking about. Renee tweeted out today, or Instagram storied, I think, John, quote unquote, accidentally threw his phone in a bonfire last night. And odds are he will never get another phone. Send carrier pigeons. We may never hear from him again. Yeah.
That's I wonder if his like SIM card was in there too. Like all the, like everything gone. I wonder what his text game is like.
Do you think this man really misses his SIM card?
Like, no, I mean, don't you have photos on there that you might be attached to? Like, I don't have my phone.
That's a good point. Although he doesn't even seem like somebody who would take so many photos on his phone. Anyway.
That was
Dynamite. Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot. I thought this was a really fun, entertaining show and a productive one when it comes to building up Forbidden Door and this Owen Hart Cup. Like, the brackets look excellent, so you're going to get some really tremendous pairings over these next couple of weeks.
It's feeling fun. Forbidden Door is a show that I think is a standout show of the entire wrestling calendar, and it's feeling like it already. So
yeah, if like this was the kind of show that I watched it, and it was like if my week wasn't so busy, I would consider going to like Buffalo next week. Like and I did not feel that in previous weeks of like, okay, Buffalo's coming up, that's a manageable drive. But like these 2 weeks of Dynamite, I thought they've done a very good job. And one final thing for Collision, it's not live on Saturday. They're taping it Thursday night in Allentown, Pennsylvania. So that's cool. The last word.
We have a super chat to go to from Boots, who sends $5 to say, Mox is okay with another man giving his wife a bracelet. Orange Cassidy possibly playing mind games and angling for an IWGP world title shot. Boots, come on.
I mean, that's a possessive trait to have. You know, it's not like he owns Rene Paquette. I mean,
it's a friendship bracelet, okay? There's nothing that puts a man more into the friend zone than giving another woman a friendship bracelet. You know, yeah. I don't think boxes.
That would also be like the wackiest buildup for an IWGP title match.
Yeah. Yeah, you give my wife a bracelet.
All right, let's go to the forum. We got a few pieces of feedback to get to. Tanise from Georgia. The crowd in Virginia was electric, and this was MJF's best babyface performance yet. I was already excited about ordering Forbidden Door, but the face-to-face between Swerve and Ospreay had me standing and pacing. I'm ready for the 30th. Every episode of Dynamite and Collision should feature multi-man tags, as the All-Star match was crazy and fun. Okada delivered comedic greatness once again. It's only a matter of time before Mina becomes All Elite. We need more Nyla on TV. Her match with Statlander was good. Claudio and Pac was excellent, with an even better finish. There's a lot to be excited about long term after a fantastic episode of Dynamite.
I don't disagree with Nyla Rose. I mean, tonight she like really throughout the past several years, she kind of has just been put into a role of like either putting over your next babyface contender, or in this case, putting over your next heel in Chris Statlander. Like, she hasn't really had a big role in quite a while, and I think it's time. I think it's time we could try Nyla Rose as like a big baby face, you know, that's challenging for either Mercedes Moné or Toni Storm, you know. All right, let's go to Brian from New Jersey, who says, very fun episode. The matches are delivering as usual, but the storytelling is also clicking very well for me. MJF showing how much of a missed asset he has been. Also an asset are these all-star tag team matches. They're over as heck. Top-notch wrestlers can be involved in them, and yet only one of them has to take the fall. I thought the segment between Swerve and Ospreay was great, and Pac versus Claudio was tremendous. Also weaving Ospreay into several other things for before and after Forbidden Door. Also happy to see Danielson versus Shingo announced, a match I saw in person for Dragon Gate USA in 2010, a match so heated it was radioactive. So
imagine, I hope it wasn't radioactive for Brian's sake.
Maybe you should think twice about going to Forbidden Door. So imagine what these dragons will do now. Yes, radioactive dragons.
Was he trying to make an Imagine Dragons reference?
Oh, there? Yes. Yeah, very good.
Radioactive.
Okay. Oh,
the guy's playing chess, okay?
Yeah.
Adam from Cape Breton. Very good episode of Dynamite. I think every Dynamite from now on should feature at least one Mark Briscoe promo where he goes off on things. Mark could read off a menu and it would be entertaining. Every match was great. The future of AEW is looking great. And if they have more shows like this, I only have two criticisms. I felt Mina Shirakawa was being mean to Mariah for no reason. It seemed to come out of nowhere. Secondly, this is a me thing. I used to love when Excalibur read off 15 matches in 45 seconds. I remember hearing criticisms at the time with people thinking they didn't give much focus on these matches, but I thought it added to the fast pace of the show. Excalibur was really good with his auctioneer voice reading off match after match. Other than that, great show tonight. I mean, they're playing with different formats of how best to get this across while also dedicating time for other elements in the show that I can only imagine, like, you know, putting this show together and how little time you really have when you are, you know, dedicating, you know, 16, 17 minutes to an 8-man tag and 15 to a commercial free opener. And like, they're just trying to, in the absence of, you know, video packages, you got more stuff like that. And they're trying to do more videos now. Like, they are trying to answer a lot of criticisms people have had. And it's always going to be, it's never going to be an exact science of how you structure the perfect television show. But I find in particular, these two back-to-back episodes seem to have been the best balanced ones we've seen in some time.
Go up next to Muggin, who says, I've taken the liberty to write a haiku about Toni Storm versus Mina Shirakawa.
Please, Muggin, the floor is yours.
Torn between lovers, an untimely decision, triangles offend.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah, we should be snapping.
The opener was very good, and Swerve Ospreay got some sizzle to the steak. The Olin Cup brackets are solid, except picking Saraya over Thunder Rosa. Who asked for this? Well, I think Saraya, like, she headlined, or at least she won the title at Wembley last year, so I think, like, that might give her a bye. Like, the person you should really be asking about is Jeff Jarrett, right? There's no rhyme or reason, I think, you know, to who gets into these.
They also just ended, like, Deonna and Thunder just finished their, like, they had their rubber match on Collision with Deonna winning it. And I mean,
yeah,
it's fine. I mean, with Jarrett too, I really have no problem with that. It's like, this is, you know, they gave us a reason of why he should be in the Owen Hart Cup tournament from a sentimental reason. But at the same time, like, you are looking at this as to headline the biggest show of the year. I just think you do need, when you have that big of a stipulation attached to it and you have no reason to not include, like, at least a Joe and an MJF who are present on television where Hangman is not and Adam Cole is not, and you know why those guys aren't in it.
The reason is just because they don't want to beat those guys. But,
well, you know, you need something better than that.
Yeah. Okay, he also said, it's also about time a title eliminator had the champions lose instead of a predictable victory, despite how cold the acclaimed are. I spent my Juneteenth watching Kendrick's concert on Prime Video.
Are you going to be seeking out this Kendrick concert?
I would have done exactly the same thing if not for Dynamite tonight. So okay. Yes, I will.
Well, we'll finish up quickly. Steve Groves Reed, great episode tonight. Opening match was a battle. MJF being back is the boost this company needs. Swerve's feeling like a true champion. His interaction with Ospreay made that match feel way bigger than it did last week. Speaking of Ospreay, his little MJF teaser was cool to see. Love the finish of the main event. We need more surprise finishes. Let's focus on the finishing move. It'll make those big moves feel more special if they don't come out every match. Who do you think is the front runner to win the men's Owen Hart tournament? I'm leaning towards this wild card pick because I don't see Danielson winning it. And I think if you take out Danielson, it's tough to go with any of the other six that have been announced.
Yeah. Without knowing who the wild card is, it's kind of tough to say. The only other viable
candidate is Brian Cage.
The only other viable candidate is Brian Danielson. And that would come with the assumption that they're not going to go with the Nigel match. And I don't think it's a guarantee that they're going to go with the Nigel match.
I would just question then, what have we been doing this for a year for?
I think that's just Nigel playing a character. And let's also remember, I mean, Danielson isn't retiring. He's still going to be wrestling on big shows. He's retiring from a full-time schedule. So it doesn't mean he won't be available for future all-ins.
All right, let's continue.
All right, and he says, very good episode of Dynamite. The Ospreay Swerve segment was awesome and sold me on Forbidden Door. MJF had a solid outing against Roosh. Shirakawa has taken us to US TV title, like, taken to US TV like a duck to water, and I really enjoyed her segment with Toni Storm. My current gripe with AEW is the new elite. After a promising start, they didn't. The now annual Spirit of AEW feud, which is very hollow. Some of the melodrama is badly acted by STDs. What does that mean? And I don't like Okada becoming the stereotype of the Asian guy who says things in a funny way. Is that a stereotype? Like, I guess so. Yeah. Like what? Like Kaintai, indeed, that sort of thing. I guess I'm not offended, really, personally speaking, Ani. Like, I respect that. That you might be, but with Okada, I think I just, like, I'm not laughing at him. I'm laughing with him. He's the guy who's actually, like, saying the joke. And when you're talking about, like, a lack, like, okay, I understand it with Indeed. I understand it with Kaintai because you're laughing at those guys and nobody takes those guys seriously. But there are very few people on the AEW roster that command as much respect to anybody, not just people in Japan, but audiences around the world as a Kazuchika Okada. That to me is a big difference. He's not really a joke. He's making the joke. So maybe that's why I don't have as much of a problem with it. But thank you for bringing the thought up. Your turn.
Charlie Bustillo, I'm at the show as we speak. Honestly, it was a great Dynamite. Felt like we were loud at our section and enjoyed every match they presented. Came with my brother and my friend who haven't been watching the shows but caught on to everything. Had a great time here. So a very satisfied viewing by Charlie in Fairfax, Virginia.
We got a Jordan from the Bronx who says, I'm definitely more excited for Swerve versus Ospreay after that promo. It can go either way, but my hope is that Swerve retains. MJF and Rouge was a hot opener. MJF's resume of working with different styles continues to expand. Him versus Hechicero can be a lot of fun. Forbidden Door is already a solidly built card, and this Dynamite did a good job of setting up shows beyond that. Good stuff.
All right. A pretty positive reaction from our feedback to tonight's Dynamite, which I would be in agreement with. And we know that all of you will be satisfied because on Thursday, it's coming MCU later with X-Men Origins Wolverine from 2009. Find out what Rich Van and W.H. Park have to say about this particular release with the countdown to Deadpool and Wolverine as they continue to navigate the Wolverine chronology through Marvel. Then on Friday, we've got Rewind Away with Wei Ting, Nate Milton, and Chris Ely going through WrestleMania, the album. And then Friday night, we are live and free at 10 p.m. Eastern time with Rewind, a SmackDown. So as soon as SmackDown concludes from Chicago, tune on over to youtube.com/postwrestling. Members of the Post Wrestling Cafe will still have the option to call in on that show. And then we've got Collision Course and plenty more to come. We are getting close to G1 season. We're going to have you all covered on the Post Wrestling Cafe throughout G1 season, which begins July the 20th. But that's it. If you would like to support us, check out postwrestlingcafe.com. And that is going to wrap things up. The final word goes to Wei Ting, who wants to tell everybody.
Bitch.